Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Psychotherapist Dr. Richard Hogan, welcome.
Thank you, Brendan.
Richard, very simple sounding topic today. How
yeah,
to be a good dad,
absolutely.
Easy.
From
you get two experts for the price of one today.
Absolutely.
I suppose the first question here is, what is a dad's job? Now, people will have differing views on this, right?
Sure.
But you'd say a big part of a dad's job is to be a good male role model.
Yeah, I think we're missing that an awful lot. I think probably globally there has been a phenomenon of like dads absent role models. And we hear lots about toxic masculinity and all that kind of stuff. And what we need to have really is positive masculinity. And so that boys and girls grow up to see what it is to be a healthy male in the world. It's a very important thing, I suppose. The first thing, you know, the
families have changed.
They have changed.
There isn't always a male father there.
No, true, absolutely. And I just think that the male does need to be there in some regards, whether it's granddad, friend, cousin, uncle, whatever it is. I think the male perspective is always important.
And what values is that male role model instilling? Because again, this is a big discussion.
Yeah, it is.
What is masculinity?
Yeah,
what are the
sure.
good masculine values?
I suppose when I think about it myself, growing up, didn't see too many role models there. And when I analyse it, and I think, well, what was absent there? What did you need? What were you looking for? I suppose it's that piece of being present in a child's life, that bit of being a bit strong, a bit of stoicism, a bit of protection, a bit of emotions. You know, that's a really important part of it, because it's that Carl Jung thing, you know, the child that learns their emotions are, you know, not important, grows up to be an adult who really can't handle emotions. And so we need a male to show us that our emotions are healthy, and we need
that male strength does not have to be
vulnerability
or toxicity.
Is your,
it is a softer thing.
Absolutely,
too.
And like vulnerability is your strength. That's what I'm always, when I'm talking to boys, particularly. You know, they often come to me afterwards, Brendan, and say, thank you so much for that conversation, because that's the first time I heard anything positive about being a male. And it's such an important thing that we present positive, what it is to be a positive male in the world. And being vulnerable and being emotional is a part of your strength. There's nothing wrong with being stoic either. And, you know, that whole John Wayne, you know, that kind of quiet type as well, that's okay too. There's all different aspects to it. But it's really important that we have these positive male role models.
I was just reading a thing, coincidentally, there in one of the papers this morning, a guy from the Centre for Social Justice in the UK, they did this study called The Lost Boys, right? And the head of the organisation said five words stood out for him from all the research and whole study. Somebody will father your child.
Yeah.
Right? So if it's not you, or it's not some good male role model, it'll be Andrew Tate.
It'll be somebody.
Somebody will fill that vacuum. Yeah, okay.
I was saying that for years before Andrew Tate arrived on the scene. And I was saying, when we were using words like toxic masculinity, we were alienating our boys, and we're telling them there's something inherently wrong about being male. And I was saying, it's fantastic to be male as it is to be female, and we should celebrate those things. And because I was saying, if we tell boys there's something in there that's toxic with them, someone will father them. Somebody will step in there like a Peterson or a Tate or a Ross or whoever it is and tell them, don't you listen to those people trying to turn you into this thing. And that's not, we need positive role models, you know.
Okay, so that's the broad
mission. That's the broad picture of it there.
Then in kind of, let's get down to the next level, the kind of strategic level maybe. Jeremy Irons was on with us last week.
Yeah, I heard that was brilliant.
He started by saying, I probably wasn't a great father, pretty free range. But actually it sounds like he was a great dad,
because
his recipe was, let them be who they're going to be, let them be happy, and kind of you look after them while they're figuring that out.
Yeah, you're holding them. And you're, what I always call it, give them a held autonomy. That's the way I always think about it in my head. You're letting them out on the line a little bit to explore and to adventure and to become who they're going to become. That's really important. Becoming is the greatest thing that we can do as human beings, you know,
becoming. Yeah.
My wife will tell me I haven't become yet.
We're all in a constant state of becoming.
I'm not there, exactly.
Yeah,
and who's there? Who's the finished product? It's like that Michelangelo quote, I'm still learning. I'm still trying to figure myself out as a dad, as a person in relationship with others. Others, how I'm perceived by others, that's a constant, never-ending journey there. And so allowing your child to become, giving them the space. I have three daughters, but I don't own them. And I never felt like I owned, you know what I mean, by owning them?
Yeah.
That they're going to be me,
you
know, and that they're going to love poetry, and they're going to love music, and they're going to love the guitar, and they're going to love the Beatles, and although I did program the Beatles into them, if I'm being honest. But
well,
you know what I mean?
Well done.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I was going to give them good music. But, you know, they're free to become who they want to be in the world. And when I see my 14-year-old daughter coming down the stairs, I'm kind of like so proud of myself in some ways that she's herself.
Yeah.
And she's not trying to please me.
Because I think a lot of fathers, do they feel the need to be moulding children? You see people like really trying to turn their kids into they want them to be.
Yeah, Brendan, we like, you know, everything goes back to those early attachments and our early experiences in life. And if we had some adverse experiences in life, we can easily attempt to fix that. You know, Freud calls it the compunction to repeat. And so we're trying to fix something that happened to us by repeating, you know.
Okay, you know, so I'm going to do it better this time. Well, through this person.
See, this is really interesting thing here, right? So this is what I see in my clinic a lot. One of the kids in the family, and maybe the dad is having conflict with the child, right, whatever. And I ask this important question. Who does Richard remind you most of? And the dad will pause and the mom will look at him. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? I've asked that question for a reason. And the dad kind of goes, yeah, me. That absolutely me.
Yeah.
I was exactly like him when I was a kid. And I know what he's doing. I call it the paradox of parenting. I know exactly what he's doing. He's trying to fix his own experience, where he wasn't validated, or he didn't feel loved, or he wasn't, this is what I often see, he wasn't pushed. And so he's got the kid who's got the talent that he sees that he had that wasn't pushed. And so what he does is he tries to exert a little bit of control to push it, to give him what he needed. And the child, all the child feels is power and exertion and dominance. And so the child, like Foucault would say, resists it. And then the father becomes into this really complex way of like, I'm giving you what I didn't get. Why aren't you grateful?
Yeah.
And it's so complicated. But when the father sees it, like, oh my God, I know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
You know?
And you see a lot of kids as well, do you, who feel their disappointment to their fathers?
Oh yeah, God, that's something I really wanted to guard against, you know, as a parent, that sense that the child, particularly around what I'd say in the last number of years around sexuality and kind of like, you know, interest in sports or whatever, you know, you might have a dad who's quite, you know, helping with the sports and down in the GA, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the son might not, or the daughter might be have zero interest in that. And, you know, possibly might be gay or whatever it is, and they feel incredible disappointment that they're not
I've
the child.
Let everyone down.
Yeah, they're letting everyone down.
Yeah.
And it's such a taint in that 400 quadrillion to the power of 150,000, which is our lives, the miracle of life. It's such a taint in that. And it's about trying to help the family to see, you know, the child that you have, not the child that you want to have, but the child that you have. And that can be tough. Of course it can be tough, because all of us, when you get that sonogram the first moment, you know, we all have that idea. Oh my God, we all have the ideas of what the child's going to be, and we can't help moving into that future projection of she's going to be this and that and this and this and this and that. So we all have a bit of that. But it's about trying not to exert too much of that over the child that you have, because it's just misery for everybody.
The greatest clarity I got about being a father was when my second daughter, Mary, born with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
If I could teach everyone like what it clarified for me, which is that all these metrics and all these things you think matter and are definitions of success are meaningless, right?
Absolutely.
And actually, it has a really good effect, I think, on how you rear, in my case, the one other child as well, because you don't apply all of that to them your eyes are opened.
It's so beautiful and so powerful, and it's such an important thing for all of us to hear, because we forget it, because we do think about those metrics of success. And a real message I'm always saying to parents is, lighten up a little bit here.
Yeah.
Lighten up, like, you know, be a bit of fun.
Humour is key
to a child.
To the relationships, isn't it?
You know, you're talking about a dad. A dad is about connection and about being present and about, you know, being there and supporting. But it's about fun too, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny thing, what my kids say, you know, if my wife, Erica, goes away for the night, whatever, the kids will say, it's a joke now, they'll say, we're going to have great fun, but we might be hungry and cold.
Yeah.
You know, because she's the one going, get your jacket, don't forget your jacket, or, you know, have you
eaten that? And this is obviously gendered and everything,
yeah,
but
it
at
is.
The same time, do fathers, are they the ones who are a bit more rough and tumble sometimes?
Well,
and a bit more
100% kind of, in my family anyway, and the girl, because I have three daughters, I was aware of that. I wanted the rough and tumble. I wanted to be that kind of guy wrestling with them, because I didn't want them to be thinking about themselves in any kind of vulnerable state. I wanted them to think of themselves strong and having teeth, and that rough and tumble and that play and that role play and that fun, everything is a bit of fun there, you know.
Yeah.
That fun teaches them how to interact with people and also how to take themselves and look at themselves in a particular way.
So just going back there to what you were saying, and you alluded to your own situation, so I'm getting that underneath all this, before we approach fatherhood ourselves, people possibly need to figure out some stuff about their own dads, like you had to do that, didn't you?
Absolutely, Brendan. And this is, I hope I articulate this well, because this is a really important point. And I'm writing about it in a book that I'm writing at the moment, and so it's kind of fresh in my head about connections and attachments and all that. I remember this moment, and I forgot it for a little bit there, but I remember this moment when my first daughter was born, feeling absolutely awful, right? And I didn't know where it came from. You know, I had a low dip in my mental health when I was a teenager and all that, and I kind of understood what that was. So then I kind of, when I analysed it, I was thinking it must be a recurrence of some earlier stuff there, right? And when I sat down and I was thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it, I started thinking about it like a knocking. There was something knocking there that I felt somehow I wouldn't be a good dad, right? That was a real fear. Maybe I might get caught in some of the, you know, intergenerational legacy there, and maybe I mightn't be able to reach the level of fatherhood that I always wanted to have, and I had it in my heart for
a
long age.
Your father was quite absent and a
very absent, very absent, and struggled with addiction, right? And so very absent and all that kind of stuff. And so I was I actually had a fear there, but I also had a fear that I wasn't somebody that a child should look up to. That was a hard thing to come to terms with. I was like, am I someone a child will look up to? And I felt really low because I was like, I don't think I am, right? I was thinking those kind of things about myself. And it took me a while to kind of figure out what kind of a dad will I be, and will I be able to meet these responsibilities? And then, of course, when the child arrived, you know, I could see myself just interacting and being a dad and being present, and it kind of calmed down. But it also motivated me to think about, well, why aren't I thinking of myself as somebody who's valuable and all that kind of stuff? And it really helped me to kind of figure out who I wanted to become. And I worked in the interest of that future self, and I worked towards it so that I wouldn't have those feelings. And it was a real healing moment, really. But for a moment there, and I think this happens to a lot of parents because I hear it in my clinic, and I think it happens to a lot of moms, right? Because, you know, the idea of having a child, the miracle of that, the magic of that. But you know, and I know what that's like in the first couple of months. In the first couple of years, it's really hard. It's magic, but it's hard, isn't it? You know, it's one of the things that they use in Guantanamo Bay is like, you know, sleep deprivation. It's very hard, and it's very hard to explain what it is. And so when people say, you must love the baby, you must be so attached to the baby, you mightn't feel any attachment there. And then all of a sudden you feel like, God, is there something wrong with me that I don't feel that attachment to this thing that is incredibly demanding?
It's part of that, that our generation, I think, particularly are possibly guilty of this, of like, maybe you know, people talk about breaking cycles in families.
Yeah.
You've talked
yeah,
about
yeah, all
it
the
there.
Time, yeah.
But that, have we overcorrected in the breaking of the cycles? Like, you know,
we have to be
the perfect parent, like.
We've overcorrected in that, absolutely. And we've overcorrected in the idea of the level of the connection that we need to have with our child as
really,
a
yeah.
best friend.
Yeah.
And like saying no means that I don't love them. And I'm like, well, no, it's actually the opposite exists there. Saying no, that actually is really important for your child. And also that your child won't be unhappy. Of course, they will be unhappy. And they will suffer at times during their childhood and all the rest of it. That's absolutely normal. We can't shield them from that, and nor should we. And so there are overcorrections here and validating every feeling. I think, you know, when you grew up in the 70s and 80s and you said, bye, and you headed out,
yeah,
you know, and you came home 10 hours later.
Are we expecting too much from ourselves
absolutely.
As parents?
Yeah? 100%.
Yeah. Cut ourselves some slack.
That's what I was saying at the start. We need to all relax. We need to all calm down because we're all victims of like TikTok too and Instagram and the perfect parent, and it's rubbish, you know.
Okay.
And parents say to me in my clinic, you know, I shouted at my child last night, Richard, have I disturbed them? And I'd say, well, if they got to 18 and they haven't heard a roar, you've really disturbed them, because that's not real life. They have to hear you and see you nonplussed and see you not at your best and hungry and all the rest. That's all really important. And there's no perfect dad. I'm not a perfect dad. I get it wrong plenty of times.
What are your big mistakes?
It's a good question. Something I really had to work on, and I suppose in that, what I was saying there a minute ago about my fear of becoming a dad, I have bad temper, right? I can lose my cool pretty quickly if it's provoked, right?
Yeah.
So I worked at that.
Yeah, there's an edge to you, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is. There absolutely is. And if you get me on the wrong side of that edge, you'd meet it, right?
Yeah.
And my wife was talking to me about it and saying, you know, got to work at this now. We've got girls here. You know, you got to get this out of your system here. And my daughter, my eldest daughter, will say, and I'll say it. Yes, I'll say, no, I know my temper is something I need to work at always. And that's just something that I've, you know, ongoing kind of thing. Now, for a long time, it hasn't been present, really.
Yeah.
But it's something that I'm aware it's there, right? And another failure, I suppose, is that I can be a little bit, you know, let's buy stuff.
Okay.
And it comes out of my own feeling, I suppose, as a child, not having that stuff to, you know, that. And so that's kind of like my wife would say, we don't need to get that. They don't need all those glass animals, and they don't need this, and they don't need that K-pop demon hunter jumper. And I'm like, okay.
So that is you getting them all the stuff you couldn't get when you were. Yeah,
exactly. And I'm aware of that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So
those
are kind of failings. Everybody has these kind of failings that comes out of their childhood.
Okay. So tell me about, You have this idea that we set a family culture and values. So what is that and how do we go about it?
Yeah, that's the most important thing you do very early on, is setting the culture in the family. Because children, you know, born into these families that we create these out of love. They accept the reality, that quote from, you know, Truman Show, they accept the reality that they're born into. And so setting the culture early and having the ethics of the family and the culture very early on is a really important thing. And modelling how you interact with people. I'm always doing that with my children, you know, how you interact with people and how you treat people that are that you don't need anything from. It's a really important...
So this is the kind of people we are.
This is who we are.
Right.
This is what I say to the kids all the time.
Yeah.
That's not what we're like now here. We don't do this, you know. That's not what we do. I said that to them, you know, when my youngest daughter didn't want to join the GA, I was like, we don't refuse it or reject it first. We go down and we try it out. We as a family, we try things out and then we decide. You know, we don't just reject it first. And she's like, okay, I could see her kind of go, okay, yeah, that's what we do.
Okay.
And so you set that culture, but also how we treat people. When you're in a restaurant, how do you treat the waiter? How do you, how do you treat the person on the street? How do you, how do you help a homeless person? I'm always showing them, you know, through those kind of acts of just modelling and being in the world, that's how we treat people. We don't only treat people a certain way because we need something from them. It's how you treat someone that you don't need something from. Is the kind of mark of your character. And that's what I'm always trying to show the kids.
And it's not about what you say, it's about what you do.
What you do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, particularly in a young child, how many of us need to hear, I love you? You know, I think of my own grandmother. You know, she lived with us for 20 odd years, a fantastic Cork woman. She was born in 1912. I never really heard her tell me, I love you, Richard. Never heard that.
Yeah.
But by God, I witnessed it every day in the kitchen, in her room, coming home from a nightclub. And I always think of that Seamus Heaney line, you know, there's love in the meal bin. He talks about the aunt and her measling shins and she's making bread. And he's basically saying in the poem, she never said, I love you, but there's bloody love in that meal bin, the cooking of the bread. And that those acts of love, they're far more profound than saying, I love you, I love you, I love
you. We're throwing that around like confetti.
I think we throw it around too much too.
Do you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And a massive warning to parents is overly reassuring your child. That is absolutely anxiety provoking. It continues a cycle of anxiety. And I see that's why one of the factors, there's loads of factors here, but one of the factors why we have a rise in anxiety is the overly reassuring of our children. It's not healthy and it makes them come to rely on the parent to satiate their own little feelings. And if I'm overly reassuring you all the time,
What does overly reassuring look like? Because you don't want to
find
everything.
It's going to be okay.
This is going to be okay ultimately, like.
Yeah, but if you don't let your child experience whatever it is that is disrupting them, that they won't come to the conclusion that they can manage it themselves. It's one of the most biggest disruptor to their resilience. The most important paradigm a child can say is, I manage that. That's a really important thing, Brendan, for like overcoming anxiety. Anxiety is the fear of like tomorrow and like not knowing what that's going to be and a sense that I don't have the skills to meet that. What's the antidote to that? Actually doing what today and managing today and knowing that I can manage tomorrow too. That's a really important skill. And so when you reassure a child all the time, like letting them sleep in your bed with you and all that, these are positive feedback loops. Positive means the rate of expansion. It grows so massively quickly, you know. And so when your child...
So hang on. So what's a healthy level of reassurance then? Because like if the sky is falling in on them, like you do want to tell them like, this is not going to matter tomorrow in a week or whatever.
Exactly. No, so overly reassuring is that you're actually trying to take away all of their feelings there by telling them that everything's fine. Don't be worried about that. So that's kind of overly reassuring. What I'm saying is, yeah, of course you help them with their logic. What I would always do is ask questions. You know, what is it particularly about that thing that you're worried about? What is that? So I'd hear what their worry is. Have you managed that before? Didn't that pop up like, you know, last year? You felt the same thing last year. So now I'm not reassuring them. I'm saying, you're going to be fine. You're going to be, you know, I'm not doing that. I'm asking them really important questions so that they can come to the conclusion themselves. Yes, I did have this before. And yes, I did overcome that.
Yeah. And of course, presumably giving them that resilience is a far greater gift.
It's the gift that goes on forever.
Are the dads more important in that situation, like of being... And again, look, this is necessarily gendered anyway, okay? So, like, please don't, nobody jump on us for if we're kind of making a differentiation between dads and moms their role, like. But are the dads, can they tend to be the person who's a bit less rushing in to reassure, the one who's putting down the boundaries a bit more? Is that a role that, I don't know, we could have pushed dads into it, but is that part of our job?
I would say that is part of our job. It's part of a mom's job too, really, kind of there. But I think it's a really important part of a dad's job. And I think that's probably what our boys and daughters really need, is to have that person who doesn't react emotionally to when they come with something.
Yes, and rush in to say, that women act emotionally.
You know, I think a dad, if your child has been bullied, I think dad will have a particular lens on it that a mom mightn't have.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And these are important lenses for children to kind of see, and prisms to see the world through.
Yeah. Let's look at the different stages then, which we sometimes do. So in the early years and when they're babies and all that kind of thing, a lot of the time, and again, this is just how life is, the moms tend to be more involved at that stage. What's the dad's job at that point, primarily?
Excuse me. I would say the dad's job is to be as involved at that stage too, right? And I think we get positioned and pushed outside that little piece there. And I think it can cause a little fracture there, because, you know, we're talking about attachments. And it's a really important thing, because I've actually seen this born out, Brian, and it's incredible, because I've three daughters, but my middle daughter was born 2014 in the middle of May. And I was I was teaching at the time, a secondary teacher. And I had her for 3 months, literally on my chest. The World Cup was on. I had her for, honest to God, now my wife, she'll confirm the story. I had her, Lizzie, on my chest for 3 months. The World Cup was on. I'd watch it at night time. I'd get up in the morning, I'd watch it. So I had her the whole time for 3 months. Of course, my wife was in there as well. I'm not saying that. But I had her more, you know. And she kind of leans on me for emotional support more than the other two.
Okay.
So for me, it's fascinating.
So A, don't absent yourself.
Don't allow yourself to be. Because it's really important, because particularly moms in those early moments of, you know, an infant, the incredible stuff that has gone on for the mother there, and the incredible hormonal, you know, tsunami that's going on post having a baby and all that, and the exhaustion and all of that's gone on there in the body and all that. It's really important that dads step up there and they come into that. And because dads can often feel like, you know, that three men and the baby, you know, and they're putting the nappy on the baby and they haven't a clue what they're doing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter about being perfect or getting it right. It's about being present.
Okay.
And a child in those early moments, this is about attachment, this is Bowlby stuff. A child in those early moments that sees the dad, of course the mother, and sees the dad's face and sees the smiles in the dad's face and the touch and the tactile, you know, that what was called, like, if you're in intensive care with a baby, kangaroo care, where you put the baby on your chest and all that. It's such an important thing for a child. Oxytocin, all those really important hormones and neurotransmitters are flying when a child is experiencing that. That is the roots of a secure attachment. That's the roots of your child going off and picking someone good in life and healthy in life. It's really important
that
stuff.
That is mind-blowing.
I know, right. But it really is.
Okay.
That they can trust you to feel, and that you're consistent, a really important thing for your child.
Okay, and a lot of men miss there. Making that bond, actually.
I think they feel pushed out. I used to see it when I was working in schools.
Or push themselves out.
Yeah,
now,
a bit maybe.
Fair,
yeah, like, true. Yeah. But because it is hard, of course it is. But I just remember when I was in school, you know, if the child was experiencing something, the management would say, ring the mom. And then if the mom wasn't there, I'd be kind of going, who are we going to ring now? And they'd say, we'll wait for the mom to be present. I'd say, what about the dad? And so there is that in the system, you know.
Yeah, okay. We'll move on a bit, because there's a couple more things I want to get to. So the teenage years then, right? Did you see the John Lewis Christmas
ad? I did.
Right? So a bit of a tearjerker, but I think it's fundamentally about communications between fathers and sons.
Intergenerational stuff,
isn't it? And maybe because the fathers now, in the John Lewis ads, it used to be like older people. Now the father is our age, like, and was a raver and all that. But the son is trying to tell the dad he loves him, and he tells him eventually with an old vinyl record back to Heaney and it being in the meal bin.
Exactly.
But I suppose it did get me thinking, what's a way to open communication between fathers and sons? Because they can tend to circle each other a bit and stuff, can't they?
And there can be competition.
They're not going to sit down and have the big deep chats often. So is it kind of doing stuff together and incidentally bonding?
Yeah, I think that's such an important, it's such an important thing, because again, your boys, sons and daughters can push you away in adolescence, but by God, they need you more than ever.
Okay.
They really need you. They won't say I need you. They won't, mightn't say I love you, but by God, in adolescence, they need you absolutely more than ever.
So you just have to keep making
you
a fool
have
of
to
yourself,
keep moving
them,
with
like,
them, making overtures and gestures. Should we go to the golf? You know, whatever it is, or going on here, or going. You know, I bring the girls.
And
out
you'd be
for
condescendingly let down now and again, but you must
watch yourself feeling let down, because you will get a grunt maybe at times. Do you want to go for a game of golf? No. You know what I mean? You might get that, but just allow that, just to see that that's the adolescent maybe pushing a little bit there and pushing back against your, you know, sentiments there. But by God, they need you.
Okay, they do want you.
They
people will be glad to hear that.
No, they do, absolutely do.
And with the boys that age, that can be there between rivalry, did you call it?
Yeah, they can be rivalry with the dad. I've often met that, and particularly if the dad, something I often see if the dad's, you know, quite affluent or anything like that. All of those kind of things can exist. Or if the dad was very sporty or very athletic, all of those things can exist. And again, it's about taking the pressure out of that and allowing your son not to be you and not feeling that they have to be you. And, you know, the idea of you being very proud of your child, that's a wonderful thing. But I'd always think about, like, you know, how can I say that in a way that they don't feel that I need to do more of that for dad to love me? And how we speak to our kids about, you know, that we're really impressed with what they're doing for themselves, more for me, you know what I mean? That I'm really impressed with what you're doing for yourself at the moment. I'm always doing that with my daughter, you know, trying to get them to picture themselves down the line. And if I had a teenage boy, because they can be quite bad at visualising the future, you know, I'd get them to think that you do small little things today that will make you happy tomorrow. And all of a sudden they kind of think, so if I do something today, I can feel good tomorrow. Absolutely. And then you're teaching them how to work in the interest of their future selves. And you're trying to pull away yourself from them so they're not looking at you as someone that they have to beat. You're not someone that they have to beat. You're there to support them and cheer them on, you know?
Yeah. It can be hard to get a teenager to see beyond their nose. Their
it
future
can.
Selves
the old car is great though, Brendan, for a boy, the car.
Yeah.
The car is great. Have a chat in the car.
Yeah.
You know,
so
you're not making eye contact and you're driving down the road. How are things going? What are you enjoying about life? And off you go and see what happens.
Yeah. There's interesting text here. Okay. Yeah. I think this is a kind of an important one. So this is from a woman, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
I'm raising a little boy whose daddy has a brain injury and doesn't know he has a son. And because we don't have family near us, my son doesn't have another male figure in his life. So I'm the parent who does the wrestling, the yes, the no, the cuddles, and hopefully the example of kindness and patience and repairing when I get it wrong. Please tell me it'll be okay.
Absolutely. And what a lucky child to have a mom like that. And I'm very sorry to hear about that injury there. But what a lucky boy. You know what I mean? That's absolute. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And of course he will be.
Yeah.
And again, it'll be about linking him with friends and, you know, expanding out his friendship groups, and he'll get friends there and he may get male role models out of that school.
There's coaches.
Yeah,
there's
coaches, teachers, exactly. And I do think we need more males in our school system, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I think that's probably, there's a deficit there. And women, of course, do incredible jobs in there, but I just think we just need a little bit more of that there.
Okay, a lot of people saying they're really agreeing with everything you're saying and it's great and all that. People saying they're grateful for your honesty about your temper, one person said. When people say congratulations on your honesty, you know you need to worry. But listen, hang on. This is, I think this one will speak to a lot of fathers as well.
Yeah.
Can you ask Richard about how a father can be the best one when he's not living with his teen daughter? It's tough not being present every day.
Oh, absolutely. And I hear that and I work with that. And thanks for that question. And sometimes you might get a bit alienated there in your relationship with your child. The thing I would always say, you know, just be present. Don't parent from a position of guilt. You know, that's a killer, you know, because you feel like, you know, you don't see them all the time. So you give in on everything and you're buying them everything and you're doing everything for them and all that kind of stuff. Don't do that. Have your ethics and have your principles and have that culture that you want to have and that relationship that you want to have with your child and work towards that. And look, honestly, I don't know what the age of the child is there, but they will see that. I have seen this borne out so much in my practice, Brendan, in my life, right, that the child will see what you did there. You might be getting very little back sometimes with your child and they might say, mom's much nicer to live with and it really hurts and you spend weeks there, you know, in a real miserable mental state there. I would say, don't give in on your culture, don't give in the ethics that you want as a parent, stay strong to those, and eventually it will be borne out with the relationship that you have with your child, because they will see when their cognition becomes more abstract and more, you know, sophisticated, they will see what you did there and how you held it there as a dad. And I might even write little notes and letters so that they can see them later on down the line. But I would, again, I would just wouldn't give in my parenting strategies there. I wouldn't parent from a position of guilt.
Okay.
Just try to endeavour to work to build that relationship.
Okay, look, there's loads more I want to ask you about, but we'll come back to this again. And there's loads of other interesting questions on text, but that was terrific. But look, the big thing, lighten up.
Lighten up and have a bit of fun.
Okay, Richard Hogan, thank you very much. We'll take a break.